Berman, Councilmember Friesen, Anya Kamara with Somerset Development Company, Natalie Avery with Friendship Heights Alliance, and moderating Chapman Todd with Friendship Heights Alliance. Let's give them a round of applause. As they come up to the stage, there's some more housekeeping items. You'll see some pieces of paper scattered throughout the room. There's a phone number on there. Send a text in. We'll try our best to get to them and answer them on the panel here today. And with that, Chapman Todd, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Mics are on. Everyone's mics on. Thank you for coming. My name is Chapman Todd. I'm going to moderate this panel coming up next. We are going to do short introductions, then go into a series of questions and back and forth. I'm here as part of the Friendship Heights Alliance. I'm a longtime neighbor, homeowner in the Friendship Heights DC side for going on 25 years. Professionally, I work in social services, including on projects like the Wisner Home that's right out the window there. So welcome. We're going to go through, as I said, if you have questions, put them up on the chat. We'll get those at the end, but we have a series of dialogue that we want to go through. I hope we will cover most of what folks are interested in, and again, looking forward to the conversation. We're going to go down and do quick intros and then get into questions.
My name is Natalie Avery, and I am the executive director of the Friendship Heights Alliance, who is also born and raised in this neighborhood in Friendship Heights, D.C.
Hi, I'm Anya Kamara. I'm with the Somerset Development Company, and I was also raised in Friendship Heights.
Good morning, I'm Andrew Friedson. I represent the Montgomery County side on the Montgomery County Council. I chair the Planning, Housing, and Parks Committee, which oversees housing and zoning and land use, and I serve as the president of the County Council as well.
Morning, great to be here. I'm Matt Fruman. I'm the Ward 3 council member. I was not raised in this area, but I raised 3 children in this area.
Okay, to get started, and I'm going to throw this to all of you, but particularly interested in hearing from the council members on this. Can you give an overview of Friendship Heights, just in general, how the neighborhood has evolved over the last few years, and where do you think it stands now in terms of growth?
So, I can start on this. Thank you very much. Friendship Heights has seen good times and less good times, and I think where we've been in the most recent years is not such good times, where we've seen a lot of vacancies and we've seen some missed opportunities. Where we are today is with the creation of the Friendship Heights Alliance, with some of the activity of some of the people here in this room, the new project coming at the Maggiano site, the Lisner project, which I was very involved in making happen, the Mazza Gallery site and the planning that's going on for what can the future of Friendship Heights look like. I think we're on an incredibly positive trajectory where we have the opportunity to work together and with our nearby neighbors to forge something that's better than ever existed before and can be a real treasure for our communities.
Well, this is a real estate crowd, so I'd say unrivaled opportunity. But Friendship Heights has everything that any other place would want, and we have struggled, I think, for decades really to put all the pieces together. And for the first time, because really of the private sector really stepping up and working together with residents and being willing to pay into a new system, both a bid on the DC side and an urban district on the Montgomery County side, we now have a level of cohesion on both sides of Western Avenue that has never happened before. We now have businesses that are willing to work together to change an environment that looked so inward previously and is now looking at connecting between and among properties. And we have DC that has stepped up and looked at housing on their side of Western Avenue. We have Montgomery County that is now looking at an urban design study and looking at opening up and reviewing our zoning moving forward. So there have been challenges, no doubt. The retail sector in general has been challenged. I think that exacerbated the existing challenges that were already in Friendship Heights. But we are coordinating and collaborating both between Montgomery County and DC in a way we never have before, and between and among the business sector and the real estate sector, but also between the residents and the businesses in a way that we haven't seen before. We have the Friendship Heights Alliance that we have never had before. So I am so bullish on Friendship Heights. I'm so excited about what opportunities there are. And I think for the thing that has been missing is an opportunity both to have the type of housing that we need to support true community-serving retail, and also to make sure that we have retail that supports the neighbors and the community, as opposed to focusing on retail that has really been about a destination for those who don't live here and aren't part of this community. So I think things are looking up, unrivaled opportunity, and can't wait to see what happens here in Friendship Heights.
Great, thank you. Anya, Natalie?
I think that the excitement and energy in this room really speaks to how far we've come since just a few years ago when the Alliance was founded. There was a realization amongst a range of stakeholders that to meet this moment, there had to be really strong collaboration. So we built that framework. And I think when you look out the window and you see the projects that are coming out of the ground, when you see the change in the public environment, you see a lot of challenges, but you also see just the huge potential and opportunity here. And I think what we have done over the last few years, and when I say we, it is across stakeholder groups. We have built a foundation for the next iteration of change in this community to bring more housing, to bring more ground level retail, to bring more of a sense of an identity and a cohesive place. And I agree, I'm really bullish on Friendship Heights too. And I think the energy in this room really speaks to that.
I remember when the corner here at the Bloomingdale's used to be a Hex, and I used to go to the Houlihan's all the time. I'd sit and get a Diet Coke and eat the free bread. So I saw that first iteration of change that you were talking about, and I'm really, really excited to see this iteration of change, and the fact that DC and Maryland are talking to each other so that growth can happen together, and for it to make sense, it's just a really exciting opportunity for us. I forgot to mention earlier, I'm also on the board, on the Friendship Heights Alliance board with Natalie.
So I want to dig a little bit deeper into the collaboration efforts, cross-jurisdictional opportunities. So how has the effort that's been years in the making between Montgomery County and the DC District Council and the Friendship Heights Alliance contributed to fostering innovation and the possibilities of economic growth? So a little bit more, if we can talk in detail about this really unique cross-jurisdictional partnership and opportunity. Again, if we can start with the council members, that would be great.
Well, I think this is going to be the secret sauce, really. And the idea that Western Avenue would be kind of an ocean that separates two different jurisdictions is so far removed from the everyday reality of somebody who steps off the metro and really doesn't think twice whether or not they're in Montgomery County or in the District of Columbia. And I just think it's really exciting, and it's exciting for two reasons. One is that cross-jurisdictional effort. It's the first time we've ever done this, not just in Friendship Heights, but anywhere. There has never been a cross-jurisdictional effort like this. And it seemed easy, and then it seemed impossible, and then it seemed impossible until it was done. And I was really proud to be able to work with so many people here. I don't think Jed Donahoe gets enough credit. He is here. I saw him earlier. But he really galvanized the business community around this vision, and he also involved residents into that vision. And that really made this a collaboration in a way that we really hadn't seen before. And I'll say it wasn't years in the making, it was really decades in the making. There have been numerous efforts to try to have various aspects of cross-jurisdictional efforts that just haven't panned out and haven't worked out because there wasn't enough buy-in on that. The other reason why I think it's so important is Friendship Heights was built in a way, we were talking with John earlier, it was built in a way that was inward. Every property, the goal was to snatch people inside your property, to grab them, and to keep them there. And so it was drive to one place, go to one place, and then leave that one place. People were selling space and not place. And to me, what a place is, we talk about placemaking, it's this amorphous, generic idea. But it's the idea that you would say you're going to Friendship Heights. No one has had historically said that. They would say, we're going to Maggiano's, or we're going to Mazza Gallery, or maybe we're going to TJ Maxx, but not, we're going to French Quarter. People do say that about, we're going to Bethesda Row. That is a place. People go and meet at Bethesda Row, and then they figure it out from there. They walk around, they grab a cup of coffee, they go have a meal, they do a little bit of shopping, they do multiple things. They go to Georgetown. They don't necessarily go to a place in Georgetown. They meet in Georgetown, go to the Georgetown waterfront. And that's what we want, and that's what we can do in Friendship Heights, and that's what this effort is going to do. And it was complicated. The Montgomery County side and the DC side are actually structured completely differently based on our different government systems and based on the way that we collect revenue. I was able to use a little bit of my background working at the state comptroller's office doing tax and fiscal and economic policy to kind of figure that out. And we had to do things on our side that wouldn't mess up Matt on his side. We had to do things on his side that wouldn't mess with us on our side, but ultimately we got it done. But the point is, it's both going to connect the businesses with each other and connect the jurisdictions with each other. And that's the type of cohesion that you need if you want people to actually show up and stay and go from property to property and place to place, not just to show up to an individual space for one stop and to leave. And I think it's going to be critical to the future success and vibrancy. And now that we're heading into the urban design study in Montgomery County, and then ultimately into a sector plan. It's gonna help with the pedestrian connections, it's gonna help with the land use, it's gonna make it a safer, more vibrant, more urban, more modern place. So it's not just about the retail or the housing or other aspects of it, it's actually about the infrastructure that supports all of it. And then the last thing I think is, we need more housing. And that has been a huge change on the DC side in particular, that DC has stepped up and recognized that housing is critical to support retail. And if you don't have a critical mass of housing, not only is that a moral imperative, which we have started to talk about it in that way, it's actually an economic imperative. If you don't have enough bodies to support the retail, then the retail is going to fail. And so for the community that wants great retail to support their neighborhoods, we need more people in the neighborhood in order to make that retail work.
Thank you. So part of the question was, how did it happen? And from the DC side, I can say that for years, many years, we've puzzled over how do we bring this area to life in a way that fully serves the community? What kinds of things can we do? When I was on ANC3E already, this is 10, 15 years ago, it was a question. It became more urgent 5 years ago as we saw more closures and things like that. And one of the things that happened was the Friendship Heights Alliance. So Natalie and Rachel reached out, they created, they started doing outreach to stakeholders in the community. At the time, I was no longer an ANC commissioner, I wasn't the council member, I was just a community activist. I met with them, they spent an hour with me hearing about the kinds of things that were on my mind about what could happen in Friendship Heights. They met with dozens of people in that same spirit, trying to gather information about what people wanted to see and build a buy-in in the community for what this could look like over the horizon. A little bit earlier than that, ULI had done a study about what might Friendship Heights look like, and that was another one of the precipitating things. One of the big takeaways from that was just one line where they reported that one of the participants said that, I don't want to go to Bethesda because I'm worried I'll bump into my parents. I don't want to go to Friendship Heights because I'm worried I'll bump into my grandparents. So we felt like, and there is an element of a natural occurring retirement community in this area, but it can be way, way more than that. So the ULI work, and then the Friendship Heights Alliance reaching out to different stakeholders, and then, I don't know if you recall, Andrew, Jad brought us together for a lunch at the Parkway Diner. Not in this area, but a great place to go for lunch. And so bringing us together to be thinking together about what we could do. And this new structure, which is, I call it a bid because that's the language on my side of the border, and you call it an urban district, I guess that's the language on your side, and making sure that we structured it in both jurisdictions in a way that could work and would be coordinated, that became a critical thing. Now, we need to figure out where it's all going to go from here. And what we have, and you know, I am totally bullish about what we can do here in Friendship Heights, we have a project of working together to try to shape it in a way that works for everyone. Personally, I take an enormous amount of pride in being able to get things done with as broad a consensus as possible. So as an example of that, if you look out the window over at the Lisner Project, we were able to, when I chaired the board at the Lisner home, get 93 units, get a project going, 93 units of deeply affordable senior housing, the first housing production trust fund project in Ward 3 ever. And the neighbors testified in support of that project before the Zoning Commission and the HBRB. It can be done. So where we go from here and working together, the idea of place is critical. I want a place where it is attractive to the residents in a relatively large radius around it. Some of that's about serving the seniors in the area, but a lot of it's about serving the families and making sure there are things in this area that draw families to the area, give it dynamism. So one of the things that I'm looking for, we need an identity for this area. I'm hoping recreation can be a piece of that, of what draws people to this area, and that we can create a place and we can create opportunities for lots of additional housing to make it as dynamic as possible. So I think the way we got to here with the collaboration that exists is the way you get everywhere. A lot of hard work and bringing people together, a lot of hearing from people, and moving forward step by step, and we're at the precipice of being able to do something really big.
And smoke fish and schmear, as I said.
I just want to say one quick thing about the oft-repeated anecdote about this being a place that you run into your grandparents. The reason you run into your grandparents here is because it is this incredible multi-generational place. Both Anya and I grew up here, and it's a place where our parents could, when they wanted to downsize, could stay. And I think that is the secret sauce of this place, is that it is a great place to raise a family, it's a great place for a first apartment, it's a great place to age in place. And I think that's a critical piece of its building this sense of place and the sense of connection with the place.
I'm going to go into some specific questions now, and I think we'll go in order, starting with Councilmember Fruman there at the end. Specifically about the district government's involvement, what is underway and what the district government is doing to enhance the economic resilience of the community and the broader growth of the development. You spoke about that a little bit, but are there things that you can specifically talk about now that are in the works that are helping set that platform?
Well, I mean, a big thing was the creation of the Friendship Heights Alliance and the creation of the bid on the DC side. And so we worked very closely together with Montgomery County and with the members of the Friendship Alliance to make sure that we could make that happen in a way that had equity on both sides and maximized collaboration. Where we are now is we're moving into more serious planning. And we have the zoning framework that is out there. There's the comp plan work that had been done. But we're going to need to get into yet another round of significant planning, because the kind of things that Andrew was talking about, and one of the beauties of this is all the stakeholders are at the table, and with all of the stakeholders at the table, you can figure out what are the trade-offs and how to contribute so that it works best for everyone, which might mean sacrifices by one stakeholder. I'm not going to do X on this site because that's going to become a common area, and that be supported by the city, but I'm going to do something over on this site so we can achieve a vision. So I think the thing that is starting to happen, but needs to happen in a more significant way now that this platform is set, is a serious planning process that brings in all of the stakeholders, including members of the community, including on the DC side, the local ANCs. And that's a project that I want to support in the council. I think we're getting there. I think there's room to go on that.
Thank you. Councilmember Friedson, Montgomery County's seen significant changes in the last few years. Can you share some key policies or projects that have been pivotal in driving economic innovation and resilience?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot. Just during this last budget, my top economic development initiative was approved, the new jobs initiative. It's a $20 million economic development effort to bring in new jobs. The idea is if you want to invest in Montgomery County wants to invest in you. It's the most significant economic development initiative, I think, maybe ever, certainly in recent memory. In Montgomery County, it's real money and real dollars to try to incentivize growth and investment, which I'm really excited about. We are moving forward with an update to look at Friendship Heights. I thought it was really important that we start with an urban design study to actually look at what are the amenities in the community, what is the community looking for, what do we need to have, and then that ultimately is going to move into a likely update of the 1998 Friendship Heights plan. And so there's a lot of opportunity there. There's a lot of interest in that, of what that is going to look like. But that's going to be exciting to see where we move forward with that. The general framework of our growth in Montgomery County is now under the auspices of our new general plan update, Thrive 2050. And that really focuses on economic competitiveness as well as equity and environmental sustainability. And will help to drive the thought process here as well. I have a bill that I worked on in the last council with Hans Riemer, More Housing at Metro. It's a tax abatement for housing on Metro-owned property, which has started to really bear fruit at three Metro stations around Montgomery County, which is exciting. And it's not only helped with the actual Metro properties, but it's helped to drive growth outside the Metro properties, because growth oftentimes begets growth, investment begets investment. So we're doing quite a bit. We also have, you talked about affordable housing, that's my pet issue. It's really the reason why I ran for county council. The idea, this issue that was mentioned earlier by Natalie about intergenerational living, which is tremendous. And is the real secret sauce to Friendship Heights. The challenge is we have an environment right now where young people can't afford to live, not only in Friendship Heights, but really anywhere in Montgomery County, in most, if not all, of DC, throughout the region. It's a huge challenge that we have. So if we want to build those types of communities and the vibrancy that comes with it, we need to have housing, a lot more housing and affordability at every level. We've been doing a ton on that. We ended the housing moratorium last year that was stopping new housing from being built. It was a backwards policy that we eliminated. I was proud to help lead the effort to end that. And so we're really trying to change the narrative on growth and the benefits of growth, and on housing and the benefits of housing. We have to view housing as part of the economic infrastructure that we have to build communities. It used to be the mindset that housing had to more than pay for itself. You had to prove, and I call it the country club mentality, where the existing residents get to set the standard with local elected leadership supporting it of what the buy-in is going to be. That's an initiation fee. And then that keeps the dues down. And that's just the wrong way to build a community. The idea that more people into a community creates better retail, creates more vibrancy, and opportunity, and that really needs to be the way that we change it. We've done a number of things on affordable housing. We have a $100 million housing production fund with Housing Opportunities Commission that's been featured in the New York Times and Vox. It's become a national model. It's being replicated around the state. The White House actually highlighted it as one of the ways that state and local governments can attack the housing issues nationwide. We have a new nonprofit preservation fund. So there are a number of things that we're doing, and actually we're heading into the every 4 years, the quadrennial effort to look at our growth and infrastructure policy. Last time, 4 years ago, our growth and infrastructure policy made it dramatically more competitive economically in order to invest and to build in Montgomery County and make sure that we were doing so in an equitable and environmentally sustainable way. There are real impacts because this is a metro-served area, a transit-served area. And so we're heading into that effort again this fall. So there are going to be a number of changes that have real impacts on economic mobility and sustainability as well. So I'm really excited about what we're doing and what the opportunities are. Some of them are global to broadly in Montgomery County, but have an impact on Friendship Heights, and some of them are specific to Friendship Heights, but provide a lot of opportunity.
Thank you for that. I think if we can continue, because there's everyone that's interested in talking about housing, and Anya, I'd love to turn to you now as the housing expert for your experience and thoughts on how this area has been effectively incorporating affordable housing into the development plans of the neighborhood, and how can the neighborhood balance growth and inclusivity with affordability?
That's a really great question, and I am 100% certain that 25 years ago, in the first reiteration of the redevelopment of Friendship Heights, that question was not asked. And I think that that is very obvious from what came after it, right? So I'm so happy that we're in a place now where people are concerned with affordable housing in a way that I've never seen before in our company. Now people are championing affordable housing, wanting it in their neighborhoods, and that is absolutely wonderful. Before we get into affordable housing, though, right now what we've done by not allowing any more housing at all, I mean, we're not even talking about affordable or not affordable, is we've created a closed club, right? This is my neighborhood. I'm going to protect its resources. I like living here. I like the way it is. And without allowing development, without allowing housing, we're basically telling the community that we don't want new members. And that's just, it's a very backwards way of thinking. So first off is just development and growth. You want affordable housing? Development and growth. You don't even have to focus on the affordable part. Just by creating supply, you will naturally bring with it affordable housing, right? The natural, all of a sudden you've got a bunch of new Class A properties, then the old Class A properties will fall to Class B, Class C, right? Naturally, affordable housing will come out of that. And so first, I think we have to rally the neighborhood, the community, to embrace development just in general. Then secondly, with affordable housing, it's hard to build affordable housing in high market areas. It just is. The land prices are extremely high, making it difficult to create it. Luckily, the mayor in DC, Mayor Bowser, has an amazing initiative with the Housing Production Trust Fund, where she has put up a lot of money to help combat that. And so there is money to help fund the affordable housing, even at very high land values. The issue that we're dealing with now is in the high market values of high market areas, a seller wants to close in 60, 90, 120 days, and affordable housing takes years upon years to put the financing together. So right now, looking for how to solve for that interim piece, how do we help affordable housing developers put under contracts some properties quickly so that they can get it under their control, put together the financing, and develop affordable housing? And in this moment where everybody's excited about Friendship Heights, about its redevelopment, we should take advantage of pollinating from the market into affordable and seeing how can we work together to help the affordable housing developers to come into this neighborhood. Otherwise, you know, historically they haven't been able to. It's great that we have the Lisner Project, and you know, at Somerset, our goal is to bring families to this neighborhood. I had the privilege of growing up here. I had the privilege of feeling safe walking around, and I want to give that to more families. And not, and again, all families from across the entire economic spectrum. So I'm just really excited. The fact that we're talking about bringing more housing to this area is the first and most important step. And I think it's a step that was missed in the last iteration. So it's really great to see the Mazza Gallery redevelopment bringing more housing in general. So.
Thank you. You know, can I chime in here for a second? Because part of what Anya was talking about is when there is the economics of including affordable housing, and it is really challenging. And in the district, we have some tools that we go to over and over again, the Housing Production Trust Fund. We have challenges in that space because of the limitation on the 4% LIHTC bonds in this moment. There are other tools out there, acquisition funds, support funds, that haven't been developed in the way that we need them to be developed in order to enable folks to avoid those kinds of delays and keep the economics of a proposed project working. And that falls to us as a thing that we need to be exploring. A couple of times in the last budget cycles, I've talked about putting more money in an acquisition fund in order to get control of a property so that it can then be more efficiently put into production of housing and affordable housing. I also want to say, I mean, there is the idea we need more housing. We absolutely need more housing. And I want to do everything that I can to support that. And here in Friendship Heights, we have the opportunity to do a lot more housing, because this is an area where there's much of it that is buffered from residential neighborhoods so that you can have a lot of density without having any sort of adverse impact on nearby neighbors. We also have to navigate the challenge with neighborhoods. And I want to be careful not to say we just need people to accept whatever gets put on the table. We need to work with neighbors to figure out how you do it in a way that buffers the neighborhoods where you can get a lot of housing done, but not do it in a way that is unfair to people who live very close to it. And we can do it. We did it at the Lisner site. I worked on the Tenley View down on Brandywine in Wisconsin when I was an ANC commissioner, won broad support. When the American University Law School wanted to come to Tenley Circle, a lot of opposition, and then we made it happen. So we don't want to fall into camps of some people are pro and then there's people who are anti and neither the twain should meet. We need to be having conversations with folks to shape projects in a way that have maximum support, because that's the way you get it done, and we can get it done. I personally have gotten it done.
Agree with everything that he just said, and I'll just add, I mentioned earlier the Housing Production Fund, that $100 million fund that Housing Opportunities Commission now has at their disposal. The magic to that fund is, one, it's a public-private partnership. The Housing Opportunities Commission retains control of the property and the project, but there's private investment. The first example of that is the Lindley at Shady Grove Metro. EYA is a major partner in that. There are multiple private sector partners in it. The other huge piece of it is that it doesn't involve any LIHTC or Housing Initiative Fund, you know, local or federal subsidies, which are, by their nature, extremely competitive and extremely limited. So it's additive to it. The challenge in affordable housing is that it's a limited pool in almost every program that we have. And once you exhaust that pool, you're done. You can't build anymore. You can't do anything else. And so we've set a limited amount and asked affordable housing providers, nonprofit and for-profit, to compete amongst themselves in a marketplace that is almost impossible to compete in to begin with. And that's why it takes, some of the reason why it takes so long to do it. So what we need to do is start thinking of more creative ways to get outside the existing framework that we have. In that case, it's a revolving fund, it's for construction loans, it helps those projects move forward much, much faster. By not having Housing Initiative Fund, by not having LIHTC, you and by taking a bunch of the risk off the table, it makes those processes go much, much faster. And so that's part of the reason why it's been able to be so successful. We also, last year, I worked with one of my colleagues, Lori Ann Sales, we approved a zoning text amendment to expedite the process if you do affordable housing. So essentially, if you qualify for any affordable housing project at the federal, the state, or the county level, you listed them out, if you qualify for any of those projects, we'll reduce your regulatory review process by 75%. Huge difference. So just to give you an example, I asked to do a comprehensive review of a significant affordable housing project near the Forest Glen Metro and asked what would the difference have been. And the answer was $8.3 million. Think about the amount of value that $8.3 million has either in making more housing affordable in that project, making the housing that existed there more deeply affordable so that it serves more residents with greater needs, or to do the next project, which, you know, $8.3 million is significant for a capital stack to make an affordable housing project happen. So we can do this. We also are really trying to step up our game, actually, to match the leadership that the mayor and the DC council have shown on affordable housing, which I think is terrific. We're up to $183 million in this budget for our local affordable housing dollars, and the state, for the first time, I will say, Governor Moore deserves credit. For the first time ever, we have a governor who is really talking about affordable housing and putting it on the agenda and making sure that we are talking about it at the state level and at the local level, so it's significant.
Just to continue the backslapping, some of what Andrew talked about the fund that allows for construction loans at a lower interest rate that then get repaid at the time of occupancy, that Montgomery County has been a real leader on. We are taking a hard look at exactly that kind of a program to copycat in the district. We'll see if we can do it, but we need more tools, we need innovation, and Montgomery County has been a real innovator.
That was really great backslapping, and I'll join in just to say thank you. And all of those tools are amazing, and at our company, we've definitely used all of those tools. And hearing your excitement in wanting to find other solutions to affordable housing, I'm going to be knocking on both of your doors to talk about that interim acquisition piece, that like quick piece of affordable housing financing that we need just to get a site under control quickly. So, you know, council members, thank you. But then in addition, I think, as Natalie has said, the collaboration that the Friendship Heights Alliance is trying to do here is, in addition to leaning on our council members, our government to provide that, also leaning on the market rate developers to help us think through how can we be successful. While this neighborhood is booming, how can we put an affordable housing unit project just next door so that it is open and inclusive to the whole?
So we've got one more quick thing if we could cover before I think we're turning over to some questions that have come in from the audience. I want to specifically focus on thoughts about investment and urban design moving forward and how that might work. And if you want to share thoughts on how we can do that as a community to be inclusive and accessible.
So I will jump in here. We need an urban design plan for this whole area, and to think about it as a cohesive whole and not just think about it as parcel by parcel. We need to think about it as an entire place. And to do that, that collaboration piece across jurisdictions, across community groups, across and with residents and businesses, and across governments, but also within governments, because a lot of our issues here have to do with the road network and the sense of place and how people get into the neighborhood, how people navigate within it. And that is going to take a lot of creative thinking about how to make a more connected place. Having more housing is critical, but we also need a sense of a civic heart. We also need that sense of being able to, you as was talked about earlier, not just having this be a one and done place, but a complete community where you can wander around, where you can happen upon a little piece of delight, that you can run into people, that you can build community. And I think that that's gonna be such an important piece of this next iteration, is that we aren't just thinking about this place as development project by development project, but we're thinking about building a complete community here.
Well, agree to agree to agree. This is a consensus panel here, but this is the whole game. This is going to be the foundation upon which the success of Friendship Heights occurs or doesn't occur, whether or not we build the type of vibrant urban community that supports people at every walk of their life, from young residents and families with young children to our older adult residents and everybody in between, young professionals as well. That's what we need in Friendship Heights, and that's what Friendship Heights is the opportunity to be. I talked about earlier, this place was built inward, and it needs to be built outward. It needs to be built by connecting the different places, and that is all urban design. And the reason why I had suggested, based on feedback that I'd gotten from residents and businesses, doing an urban design study before we reopened the 1998 plan in Friendship Heights was specifically to make sure we were doing this in the right way, that we were pushing that forward. And I think we're uniquely positioned because we now have the connections and the collaboration, the coordination that we hadn't had before, and a real interest to connect between and among the property lines and between the two jurisdictions. And we're doing this in Montgomery County. The general plan that I mentioned earlier, Thrive 2050, one of the key concepts of it is specifically focused on complete communities, 15-minute living. The idea that in a place like Friendship Heights, you should be able to walk within 15 minutes to most of the everyday things that you need. That means walk to a rec center. That means walk to a job. That means walk to a volunteer opportunity. That means a dry cleaner, a coffee shop, a restaurant. All of those things are not only possible, they're well within sight in Friendship Heights, and we can deliver that, and we can do that, and we have seen it successfully done in Bethesda with the Bethesda Downtown Plan. This is one of the key focuses of the Bethesda Downtown Plan, to urbanize that area to make sure that it is a complete community, and it has been successful in that sense, and I think that same level of success we certainly have the opportunity to do here in Friendship Heights, and even better, we can do it in collaboration and coordination with the District of Columbia.
So I'd like to chime in for a second. I think the fact that this meeting is in this space is perfect, because from this space you look out and you see the cranes, you see the projects that are happening. Here, it's an empty space. We want it filled with activity, and that's part of the future. You also can see the topography, and you see that on the Montgomery side there's a lot of building, and on the DC side, less so. And so we need to do planning for all of it. On the DC side, there's actually the opportunity for an awful lot of building. And we have a long list of things that we want to see included in that. We have community amenities. We want a lot of affordable housing. There's a wish list there that is expensive. And so we're going to need to figure out the economics of how that works. And frankly, it is going to require support from the government of the District of Columbia in order to make it possible to have all the things that we want to see in this area, which also means the government of the District of Columbia and the residents of the area need to be right at that table in shaping what is coming so we can build a consensus around it. We need to do the plan, we need to build the consensus, we need to be in a position to offer the support so that we can make this what it can be, which will be terrific.
Great.
Amen.
Thank you for that. I think, is there time for a question or two?
There's time for one question.
Okay.
Over a dozen questions came in. Sorry, we can't talk about this topic all day. But here's the first one. Lots of questions on this. What will be the future of disposition of some of the open parking lots in the area?
So I'm going to chime in on the district side, and this is know, a giant elephant in the room around Friendship Heights. And there had been, I think, a question about what are the challenges over the horizon, a challenge is interest rates, a challenge is doing the planning. A challenge is what becomes of the Western Bus Garage and the Lord & Taylor site, which is a giant parking lot, and those two places together represent an enormous opportunity to make a positive difference. Now, it's tied to the biggest challenge our region faces, which is we need to fully support WMATA so that WMATA's in a position to move forward on those sites, which they're not right now given all of the other noise around it. But this is a thing that we need to be 100% shoulder to shoulder on. We need to strengthen WMATA, give it security, so it can turn in earnest to the planning for those sites, which today represent an awful lot of concrete and asphalt, and in the future could be something really great. There's an activist group in the area on the DC side, and they say, two sites, one plan. And that's right. I mean, it's more than two sites, one plan. It's 10 sites, one plan, but it's certainly two sites, one plan. We need to strengthen WMATA and get into a position where we can do a planning process for those two enormous parcels, which have so much potential for the region.
Well, here on supporting Metro, it's the skeleton of the transportation network and very much the bones of our local and regional economy, and something that I think Maryland and Montgomery County have really championed and led on. I'll just note on the parking lot side, this is mostly private sector parking lots on the Montgomery County side. The two largest that most people think about are the Geico site and the SAC site. We do have an opportunity to look at some of these as part of the conversation when we revisit the 1998 plan moving forward. And we are going to have to figure out how to build and create communities and spaces and places that serve residents and generate economic activity in a way that makes sense. And ultimately, the surface parking lot to the street is just not something that activates a place and a space. It's not inviting, and it's not particularly safe, and it doesn't create the type of investment opportunities and community serving amenities that we really want. So this is the opportunity that we have before us. I will note, if you're looking at things to emulate, a 15-year tax abatement on Metro-owned property for private sector high-rise housing development would be a great place to start. That was the More Housing at Metro that we did in Montgomery County. It is leading to three significant developments, including one at Strathmore Square, which, by the way, is 22% affordable. So there were big questions and concerns about the affordability of that, of what we should force on it, and whether or not that was economically viable. Well, it turned out we did it in a thoughtful way. Amazon came in as one of their key affordable housing projects, and now the affordability level in one of the most desirable high-income places and one of the most strategic locations in the region, in North Bethesda at Grosvenor, where one of the most important arts institutions resides, will be 22% affordable housing as well as senior housing. So it's exciting. There are opportunities to do it, but to Councilmember Frugen's point, it takes real leadership from local government and real collaboration and coordination between residents and businesses to really make that happen, and it requires a lot of buy-in to make sure that it does.
And can I give the last word? Thank you for that. That's very helpful to understand as a neighbor who walks by those all the time from both perspectives. Can we give the last word to Natalie on the Friendship Heights Alliance?
Yes, I would say that the parking lots, the WMATA sites, all of these sites in this neighborhood, there's an incredible opportunity to rethink and remake this place in a way that can be more vibrant, more inclusive, all the things that we've been talking about, they're part of a puzzle. And I think sometimes we can focus too much on particular pieces of the puzzle. And the whole point here is that we need to be thinking about the whole puzzle together. And that's what we're doing. We're building the foundation for that, and you can see it reflected in this room.
Thank you for addressing that question. We have one dire question that everyone keeps asking. Sorry, one more question. In talking about multifamily projects and dealing with vacancy rates in the region, how will portfolios manage to absorb more new units in Friendship Heights pipeline?
Well, I don't know that that is, the vacancy is true across the entire region, I think. I know that it's happening in a lot of places, but in places like DC, in this neighborhood, with amazing public schools, with beautiful parks, with amazing resources that's safe, I don't see this neighborhood having an issue with absorbing new units, especially because it has been so long since any new units have arrived. People are dying to come into this neighborhood. I heard some horrible statistic about the average cost of homes here. So people really want to be in this neighborhood. They're willing to rent. They just want to get in here. So while I recognize that that might be an issue somewhere else, I don't think that Friendship Heights will be experiencing that because of how little housing has been introduced.
Yeah, I'll just say, I mean, in commercial office, that's a real issue. That's a whole different biz now conversation that we could have at another time, where there are huge numbers of commercial office vacancy and there's a real inherent problem with commodity office space and its value. By the way, for those who don't believe in the basic tenets of supply and demand, I give you the commercial office crisis that we face in this country. That is, by definition, a supply and demand problem. There aren't enough people and there aren't enough businesses that want to occupy enough spaces unless they're essentially trophy spaces in the most strategic locations available. Other than that, it's worth very little, and this is a struggle that many people and many investors are having. On the housing side, I agree. And I think we need to separate facts from feelings, because it's really important. The feelings are totally legitimate, but we are not even today building as much housing as we were building in the 70s and 80s. And a decade ago, and you know, in the 90s and early 2000s, we weren't even building close to the amount of housing that we were building in the 70s and 80s. We essentially stopped building housing from a data perspective. We essentially stopped building housing in this region, and particularly in Montgomery County and in the northwest part of DC, for essentially 25 years. And so now we're just barely catching up, and we are not even close to the trend line of where we should be, because we're only building essentially what we should have been building the whole time. You know, we're not building catch-up units, essentially. We're building, you know, standard units in terms of the numbers that we need. The difference today, as opposed to previously, particularly in a place like Montgomery County, is it used to be, like where I grew up, next to a farm in Potomac. A horse farm, Claggett Farm. So that 220-ish unit, single family, detached, impacted like eight neighborhoods around it. You know, maybe that's 1,500 people, 1,500 families. It's not that many, you know, comparatively. If you start building in Friendship Heights, or you start building in downtown Bethesda, or in Silver Spring, in Tenleytown, you're impacting tens of thousands of people, residents and employees. And so the disruption is exponentially greater when you're doing infill development, but the number of units isn't exponentially bigger. It's actually smaller than what we were previously building. So we have to have a data-driven effort here. It's why we're following and emulating what the District of Columbia did with localized housing target. It's something that I have pushed as chair of the Planning, Housing, and Parks Committee. We are localizing our commitments under the regional housing targets, and we're actually now starting to look at 2040 and 2050 for housing targets. We're going to be the first jurisdiction anywhere that's looking at 2040 and 2050 for housing targets, because the reality is the decision we make today probably won't impact 2030. The policy decisions we make today are probably going to impact 2040 and likely 2050, and so we really need to get ahead of these issues and make sure that we're changing. I think the good news, as you heard earlier, the narrative around housing and around affordable housing has changed so dramatically, even in the short time that I have been a council member for 6 years, that it is really amazing, and it has provided us a significant opportunity. And the question is, what do we do with it here in Friendship Heights and throughout the region?
So I want to actually validate the question a little bit more, because I track this. In the Class A apartment space, we have about 8,000 vacancies in the District of Columbia and about 12,000 new apartments in the pipeline. And so I do wonder what's happening here and what's going to happen. Shouldn't rents be coming down, frankly? But I do think in the moment that we're in for a certain category of housing, we may have more than we need in this moment. But as Andrew was saying, this is, nothing's happened. The big things that are going to happen here are pretty far off. And in the fullness of time, the demand for all categories of housing is going to go, can only go up. In the meantime, the affordable housing space, there is a desperate need for affordable housing in all parts of the area, and particularly in the District of Columbia. So to the extent...
Particularly in Ward 3.
Fair. We want to see a lot of affordable housing in the mix of what gets done here, and I don't think we need to worry about whether that will get soaked up. I've spoken to some of the developers here in the room and expressed my concern about how much Class A housing is out there and the amount of inventory, and they've said, looking over the horizon, don't worry about us being drunken sailors. We're gonna make our calculation about whether or not this makes sense as a long-term investment. So I don't think you need to worry about crazy overbuilding if there is a perception that there isn't gonna be the demand. I think people are gonna make a calculation about whether or not there is the demand or will be the demand out there in the life of a project, whether it makes sense. We need to create the framework that then can get filled in. And I guess I want to say one thing on, you know, Andrew raised, and that goes back to having a plan. And Andrew raised the idea of a tax abatement as a way of pushing that forward. I could be very supportive of the tax abatement. I'm not supportive of a tax abatement as a blank check. I want to see the plan. And if there's a great plan that has been built up and that has the buy-in, then I 100% want to invest in that kind, in making that happen. So let's work together to make that plan. And in the fullness of time, this place is going to be amazing.
And can I just add that I agree with you, the short-term returns are investors' problem. The long-term vision is really the government's job. And so that's what we really need to be focused on, whether or not the community needs and will support housing infrastructure over the next 20, 30, 40, 50 years. That's really our job. I'll leave it to other people to figure out whether or not they're going to get the proper return, you know, over the next quarter, the next couple quarters, the next couple years. That's really not my concern personally as a policymaker. I also think it's really important, and we lose sight of this all the time, today's luxury housing is 2 and 3 decades from now's naturally occurring affordable housing. So we cannot solve the housing issue unless we have naturally occurring affordable housing, and that doesn't exist without today's luxury housing being built. That is the whole game. The reason why there is a desperate need for naturally occurring affordable housing, there's not nearly enough of it as we would like. We desperately want to preserve it and spend hundreds of millions of dollars across the region in order to pay to preserve it, is because we haven't built anywhere near enough of it. And so that is really part of this conversation, is we need enough housing in general, and today nobody builds less than luxury. Affordable housing is listed as luxury affordable housing. It's just government subsidized housing and not government subsidized housing. And those have certain restrictions, and there's certain rents that are associated with those different levels. And we have to just get out of this idea that there are two separate categories that have nothing to do with each other, because the reality is they have everything to do with each other, and in fact, they're basically the same thing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all for that. Thanks to the panel.
Thank you, Chuck.
That concludes the panel. We'll be taking a break. Everyone will stretch your legs and get some round coffee in the back.